The Good Neighbor Network. FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro. FM 100.5 Smyrna. And online at WGNSradio.com.
What is up? We're going to show giving you the truth about personal finance. This is Financial Coaching Radio, and I'm your host, Jason Quall, certified financial, one of the only independent commission-free financial advisors in Rutherford County. For all about me, check out Jason Quall's CFP.com. That's J-A-S-O-N-Q-U-A-L-L-S, CFP.com. If you'll jump in, questions, comments, click email the show at financialcoachingradio.com. We'll get back with you as quick as we possibly can. It seems that individual investors and stock picking, or at least attempting to invest in single stocks, is becoming more popular. And I think it has this trend every time the market gets near or reaches new all-time highs. And I think people look at stock investing, not so much like mutual funds, ETFs, but certainly stock investing. I think they look at it in a sense like a lottery ticket. You can put a small amount into a security, one single stock, maybe five single stocks. Because today you can buy partial shares. Back in the day, you'd had to buy full shares. So if we're talking about buying Berkshire Hathaway, which is tens of thousands of dollars per share, really couldn't be done. And I assume you could do that through a partial share investing, something like Robinhood. There's many other ones these days. But there's some articles running around the internet, interwebs, talking about what if you put $1,000 into Netflix or Microsoft or Intel or Google? What would you have today? We're going to focus just on one because we don't have time to go through them all. But let me say, is there anything wrong on the surface level of buying individual stocks? And we're not talking about speculating, which I think that's where you would speculate. What is my philosophy on? Well, my rule of dumb, if you want to call it that, is whatever your net worth. Now, if you're just starting out, you're dabbling, you're just speculating, and you want to see if you hit it big, great. But if you have, let's say, $50,000 or more, maybe even less, but certainly $50,000 or more, or certainly more. No more than 10% of your total investments should be held in single stocks because I believe that it creates more risk than necessary without a ton of long-term reward. If you bought every stock that I just mentioned 10 years ago, would it have beaten the market? I don't care. Not going to go back and check. But when you're investing in single stocks, you're going to have, it's like lottery tickets. You're going to have some winners. You're going to have some losers. And your winners have to offset your losers, or you're not really making the return. But a lot of single companies just don't beat the long-term market average historically. Some do, a lot don't. But Netflix, of course, is something we all can relate to. I'd love to have the stats on these figures of how many people in the United States have invested in Netflix. Let me say, I'm not endorsing single stocks. This is more informational for both of us. I'm not going to explain to you what Netflix is. It says they're serving 300 million paid memberships in more than 30 languages, 190 countries. Who remembers when Netflix started out? It's DVDs in the mail. Let's see. After peaking at 17.7 billion, a whopping 50% increase versus the previous year, and that was in 2021, Netflix cut spending. Anyway, let's talk about what has happened to Netflix stocks. What would you have today if you invested $1,000? It says 20 years ago. I thought the dang article said it was 10 years ago. That's 20 years. Of course, why do we go back 20 years? Probably because the last 10 years is not as great. If I misspoke earlier, then I apologize. What would you have today if you had $1,000 invested in Netflix 20 years ago? has clobbered the broader market return over the long term, generating a 38% total return over the past two decades versus 10.6% for the S&P 500. By comparison, $1,000 in the S&P 500 would be worth about $7,600 today. Where is the Netflix? Wow, that is astounding. I was not expecting that number, folks. And we're going to take Kiplinger's word for it, or the author of the article's word for it. If you put $1,000 in Netflix 20 years ago, it would be worth almost $600,000. That is amazing. So here's the catch here, though. Here's where you don't want to get blinded by this information. Let's say you invested a total of $5,000 and you put $1,000 in each company, but three of the five that you bought have been terrible and two of the five have been great. Well, in this scenario, you had one company that was just tremendous. But the thing is here, if it is tremendous as that return has been over the last 20 years, it came with a lot more risk. It came with substantially more risk, and it could have easily been the opposite. You know, another company could have easily overtaken the popularity of Netflix and had not done as well. So there's when we go back to the philosophy of we don't want to risk everything. It's not that we can't use common sense and invest. We just don't want to risk everything that we have on two, three, four, five companies and expect that's always going to outperform the market, because what was doing well 20 years ago or projected to do well 20 years ago, 5 years in, maybe you may need to make a change, and there's a mix and changes of the companies that you're in and out of, and getting that right enough times to beat the broad market for the average individual, even for professional money managers, it's not that simple. But that is flat out astounding. 20 years, Netflix turned $1,000 into almost $600,000. If you want to check them out, they're online. Kiplinger, they go into a lot of the major companies. It would be interesting to see how everything else is compared. Apple, Netflix, Google, Intel, those things. All right, this is Financial Coaching Radio. After the short break, John Baker, estate planning attorney, is going to be joining in, and we'll be talking about estate planning if you have minor children, children under the age of 18. This is Financial Coaching Radio. I'm Jason Wall, certified financial planner. Back with you right after this.
Recent reports show that half of Americans don't have any of the most basic estate planning documents, like a will or powers of attorney. Folks, if you're married or have children, you can't put this off any longer. Call John Baker, estate planning attorney, right now at 896-5621. As a husband, wife, mother, or father, you owe it to your loved ones to make sure your estate plan is in order. So call John Baker at 896-5621 or go to bakercounsel.com.
Would you like your business to be more efficient? Well-organized financial records are the foundation of any successful business. Taking advantage of your competition today by calling Tutherow Helen Welch CPAs at 848-1072. They can provide you with expert bookkeeping, payroll services, tax planning, and much, much more. Go to thwcpa.com or call them at 848-1072 today. Get a second opinion. Get a second opinion. Get a second opinion. I'm Jason Qualls, commission-free certified financial planner. I can't stress enough how important it is for you to get a second opinion on your investments and financial plan. Unfortunately, since most financial advisors care more about selling you financial products than providing objective advice, it can be hard for you to know who has your best interest in mind. Call me, Jason Qualls, a commission-free certified financial planner, for a free no-obligation investment review at 878-2134 or go to my website, jasonquallscfp.com.
Back to the show. This is Financial Coaching Radio. I'm your host, Jason Qualls, Certified Financial Planner. FinancialCoachingRadio.com is the place to listen to the show anytime, anywhere. Again, FinancialCoachingRadio.com. Joining in today to discuss estate planning is John Baker, attorney. BakerCounsel.com is his web address, BakerCounsel.com. John, welcome back to Financial Coaching Radio.
Thanks, Jason. Great to be here.
Let's discuss new parents and estate planning. I got a unique question the other day. Most of the time, and you may agree with this or not, when someone that's in, you know, they have young children and they're coming to you for an estate planning evaluation, consultation, to me, it seems like getting a will would be on their radar. But it seems more in the last few years, trust planning is what's on their radar. Is that because of media, marketing, or people seeing more value in trust? Or what is your take on that? And we're not talking about high net worth, talking about regular people, you know, with minor children, and they're coming to you and say, hey, I want a trust. Is that something that's typical?
Yeah, what I think they're probably hearing a lot of is probably more now than ever, and it's probably generally good information, is that you need to set up a trust for your minor children in case, you know, the parents, you know, die, that there'll be a plan set up for the children, and utilizing a trust versus, for example, a court guardianship. So I think that's probably what they're hearing, but –
And why does one need, I guess in some capacity, if you have minor children, there has to be a trust established, right?
Well, sometimes, I mean, if there's not one that the parents have set up, then commonly what will happen is that it will actually be under a court guardianship until the child's 18. And that's a whole different type of process. Whereas with the trust plan, the parent's going to have a more ability to kind of set the parameters of the trust, as well as the age that may be involved. You know, with a guardianship, normally that ends at 18, because that's just basically what the law is. Whereas with the trust, you may say, well, 18 is still pretty young, maybe 21 or 25 or, you know, something else that may be better.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, if you inherit money, you know, we've had mutual clients that have done this. They inherit money from a deceased family member. They're a minor. And as soon as they're 18, they have now, you know, things have to go through the legal process, but it's their money. They can pretty much do whatever. But as you know, most of the time, the 18-year-old is not in a phase of their life where they're managing their own assets. The parents, you know, are still behind the scenes controlling things. Right. And that's where, you know, let's contrast having a trust for a minor child after your passing versus the guardianship, a court-appointed guardian through. Well, you could do that through your will, right? You could have a will and not have a trust created in your will, or you could not have a will and still have to have a guardian, guardian for a minor.
If you have a will and it doesn't have a trust, you might have nominated a guardian, you know, in case that did happen.
And I think when people hear guardian, they think, well, who's someone who's going to care for them? Yeah. If you just name a straight up guardian, you don't put specific parameters on that. Are they still managing the financial affairs, or is it just the well-being?
Yeah, I think, ultimately, it's going to be both. Now, it'll be up to the court to determine who should be in those roles. There may be what we call a guardian of the person. That's like who's making health decisions and who the child may be living with. Then we have a guardian of the property or guardian of the estate, and that guardian will be managing the property, the assets, and the inheritance. And it may be the same person, or it may be different people.
So there lies the issue, is that naming or creating a trust that gets created when you pass away through your will, or having a standalone trust, it is giving the parents more authority to dictate how everything is managed, where if you just have a court-appointed person, then it's,
you're pretty much following, you know, the statutory process, you know, with the court proceeding. Whereas with the trust, you know, like I said, the parents can, for example, they might make it what we call a pot trust, where all the money goes in one pot, and we haven't divided it out in equal shares yet, because we may have one child that's 15 and we may have one child that's 5. There's a 10-year gap. And typically what the parents will want to do is to get the youngest child to a particular age, let's say, you know, 21, graduated from high school or graduated from college is what they'll typically do. And then whatever's left, it will go out in equal shares. Because remember, the older child, they will have already provided support for all those years, while the younger child, you know, has not reached the age yet. So,
well,
so
on that note, taking a little sidestep, you know, you mentioned, you know, someone who's a teenager. You have a minor that's a teenager, one that's not. Anyone that has children knows that teenagers typically are more expensive than younger in most cases.
Right.
How does the trust play that out in that scenario, or guardianship play that out to say, well, you know, someone that's, you know, a 16-year-old high school student is going to maybe need cars where the 10-year-old may not. How does that – is that just kind of discretion?
Yeah, it's going to – in a guardianship, you know, to make a purchase such as a car, you typically get pre-court approval to do that. You know, you're not making those purchases.
That sounds like a headache. Would it be a headache?
It's, you know, a guardianship can be – you know, you've got a court proceeding, and when significant transactions like that, you know, like say for example purchase a car, you know, you've got to go to a court. Of course, you have to have an attorney to help you navigate the guardianship processes, so it can be a time consuming thing. The guardian is required to file formal accountings with the court each year, and so there's a fairly extensive process in the courts for guardianship. And sometimes that's one of the reasons why the parents like the trust. They can eliminate the court part of that.
And that's the big key, right? Not having to go through all the extra steps and approval of a court system that doesn't know you or your children.
And of course, as with any trust, you know, one of the keys is making sure you've got you have really good trustees, or you have a process to make sure that, you know, a competent, trustworthy trustee is going to be there, because you know, the trustee is the manager.
So if you name a guardian, the court's got to approve that. If you name a trustee, does the court have to approve that?
Normally, no.
So that gives you a lot more flexibility and control there.
Right.
So I think we're in agreement. If you have minor children, a trust in some capacity would be ideal. Do you believe that a standalone trust is necessary in a typical minor children situation?
I'd say, you know, in most of my cases, unless it may be a disabled child and we're creating
that's totally different there, of course,
situation there. But just in a setting where you don't have those sorts of issues, normally it's going to be a trust that's written in the will. Most of the time, the younger couple is going with a less expensive will plan, and we will build that minor's trust in the will.
Do people find that confusing? Because I think they're like, I know a will is a thing, I know a trust is a thing, but when you say a will that creates a trust, they go, what? Now, you and I are used to that language.
Yes. In fact, I had a Register of Deeds office call me the other day because we deeded some property into a sub-trust that was created in the main trust. And that was confusing to them. They were like, well, which trust is it? And I had to kind of explain to them how it, you know.
How does the Register of Deeds get involved?
Well, that was in a deed. We were conveying property to the trust. But it was just kind of an example where you have a trust inside a
will. I've never actually heard of that one, a trust inside of a trust.
Well, it's like, let's take like a revocable trust the parents create. And when the parents die, they've set up trust for their children in that document.
So besides a disabled child, young parents, typical will-based plan, maybe the trust gets created at death from the will, but a standalone trust is typically not necessary in most cases.
That's right. I think that's correct.
And since you mentioned, you know, disabled children, now that's where, you know, protecting government benefits is necessary, and that's where a standalone trust. But can a will create a special needs trust the same way it would for a non-disabled child?
I do it all those ways. It just depends on the clients and the situation. One of the reasons the standalone trust is a nice feature to have, though, is that not only can the parents contribute to this trust, but, you know, the grandparents, you know, could use it for their estate planning as well if they're going to contribute for the child. So other family can contribute to that standalone trust for that child.
This, you know, not that it's as complex, but I would say if you're married or single with no children, not as complex, but in a sort, certainly if you have a high net worth where there's inheritance taxes involved. But in the situation with minor children and going through will-based plans that create trust or standalone trust for when it's necessary, that's a that is type of planning where only expertise could be relied on, right? It's not something you could just run out and get with the technology we have today. It would be too intense and too detailed to do this on an online doc. You could get the document, but probably wouldn't be able to draft it appropriately.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I think so. I think you're right.
Are there services out there today? We all know that there's will services out there. You can jump on a website and buy a will in 5 minutes. But is there more detailed type planning that goes in, maybe with the use of artificial intelligence? Is that changed at all in the landscape of estate planning?
I haven't, as far as drafting, I haven't seen anything that they would actually call artificial intelligence. But, you know, I'm sure there's things out there in the, you know, that people, technology people are working on. But, you know, the drafting systems, you know, we use are more traditional, you know, computing, you know, utilizing.
But I'm thinking if someone went on a website, I don't know if that's the trend, everything is kind of getting taken over by the technology changes. And, you know,
I don't think it's to that level yet. Maybe one day they'll surpass the human attorney, but I don't.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever see that. You know, that was kind of the thing 10 years ago in financial planning, is that, you know, technology is going to, you know, eliminate the need for one-on-one, face-to-face financial planning advice. It's just tough to do that because there's so many facets of every type of planning.
Well, everybody's case is so personal and nuanced. You know, everybody's got their particular things. But I did see, I think it was on Vanguard, where they have some sort of, I don't know if they call it AI, but some sort of artificial advisement system that they've got.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure other companies have it too. So
that's more of a way to, to make your investments, you know, managed by, you know, computer system.
Yeah.
But you're still not getting one-on-one advice for your unique situation. And in estate planning, you know, you could have one child. You could have three children with various ages. Maybe one's an adult and two are minors. Well, it's a lot of situations.
Here's an example of where I think AI would have a hard time. And this is just a typical thing, because every estate planning, every family, there's all, you know, everything is very unique. So I was meeting with a gentleman, and he was going to leave two children, you know, the bulk of his, or actually it was a child and a grandchild, the bulk of his estate. And there was one child he was not going to give to that child. He was going to give to that child's daughter, so his grandchild. And so, you know, okay, I got that, you know, pretty straightforward. And, you know, but because we had conversation and I was delving a little more into his situation, he mentioned that, well, you know, there's this other child out there that, you know, I don't think is really mine, but, you know, not surely, you know, hadn't ever been legally determined, but I might be on the birth certificate. Well, you know, that's that might be an issue we need to address in the estate planning. So if you were just filling out the form on the internet and it asked you for your children, would you have delved into that, you know, child?
And that would create an issue if something happened to this person, that maybe a lawsuit involved where they're challenging the estate planning court.
But because we had, you know, a thorough conversation and I was able to learn about this, I'm able to address it in the document and take care of the whole thing so it won't be a lawsuit when he dies.
And that's all really what estate planning is about. Of course, you're getting basic contingencies in place if you pass away or become disabled, but it's just making the documents tailored to your situation, because as we think of every 30-year-old with minor children being the same situation because they're facing the same, you know, concerns with raising their children, but there's still nuances within the family that cannot be addressed unless you're sitting down having that conversation.
Well, I tell you, and even in those conversations, what I've learned, and particularly going through COVID, and, you know, and I've been doing this a long time, is that even when we were doing a lot of Zoom consults, you know, they which was okay, you know, they were communicating one on one or with the family or the married couple or whoever. We even got video with it, and that's okay, but I've still found that it's not as good as meeting in person. I don't know what the meeting in person thing is. There's just a dynamic about that, but you just start thinking and talking about things, and things come to mind, and we communicate, and we, you know, we kind of banter those things.
It feels a little rushed when you do the Zoom stuff. You feel like you're trying to get
it. Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, it's so even with that, I find that an in-person consults are valuable, and I really like to do that whenever possible in estate planning, because it's a big undertaking. This is the estate that you've generated for your entire life, and now you're setting it up to for your estate purposes. And it's something that you know really does. You don't want to take chances on just grabbing a document off the internet and filling it out yourself.
All great tips. If you have minor children, trust planning, will-based planning that creates trust for your minor children, reach out to John Baker, BakerCouncil.com, BakerCouncil.com, also an office right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. John, I appreciate your time today.
All right, thanks. Jason, this, great to be here.
This is Financial Coaching Radio. Stick around. I'll be back right after this.
Don't get it twisted. This rap is my mother. It's not a game. What you heard, it's what you hearing. Listen.
Do you have a financial plan? Listen. I'm not talking about a worthless binder full of pretty charts and graphs. Are you certain you're on track to reach all your financial goals? A comprehensive financial plan is about so much more than just your IRA and mutual funds. It involves risk management, tax planning, professional investment management, retirement, and estate planning. Make sure your entire financial life is in order by calling me, Jason Qualls, a commission-free certified financial planner at 878-2134, or go to my website, jasonquallscfp.com.
When news breaks, when traffic's horrendous, when the weather's bad, be the first to get the news, traffic, and weather you want with a text alert from News Radio WGNS. Free text alert. Sign up online at WGNSradio.com.
Did you know that the U.S. tax code has over 70,000 pages? This is precisely why you must have a tax expert on your team. The folks at TH&W CPAs have been providing their expertise to individuals and businesses in Middle Tennessee for over 50 years. And now they have an office right here in Murfreesboro. Call Kevin Sizemore today with TH&W CPAs at 848-1072. That's 848-1072 or online at thwcpa.com.
Don't get it twisted. This rap is my mother. It's not a game. What you heard, it's what you hearing. Listen, it's what you hearing.
Welcome back to the show. This is Financial Coaching Radio, the one show giving you the truth about personal finance. No books to sell. We'll leave that to the other show, or shows for that matter. We're going to jump right into a segment. We started off in segment one. And just to see where we're at on this single stock article from Kiplinger, what if you took $1,000 and bought certain companies, what would you have today? In the first segment, we talked about Netflix. Now a very popular single stock with technology changing is NVIDIA. What would NVIDIA be worth today? Let's see if you can find it fairly quickly. It said it lost half its value in 2022. NVIDIA stock being way much further, folks might know. $12 a share is when it started charting in 1999. Don't really care. Where is the bottom line on NVIDIA? If you would have put $1,000 in 20 years in NVIDIA 20 years ago, it'd be worth more than $930,000. And that seems like it's a simple transaction, but that's the key, right? Do you have that much foresight to go, you know what? Netflix, NVIDIA, or whatever company they're, of course, I think all the companies they picked are going to be tremendous earners. But how many people picked companies 20 years ago to invest in that are no longer around today? You know, did anyone even understand NVIDIA the way they understand it today? Did they even understand Netflix the way they understood it today? Did we, 20 years ago, were we still doing the DVD thing in the mail? Do we think there was going to be this streaming takeover? You really have to have that foresight and vision, because we could play this game all day long. What if we bought whatever company when it came out? What's it worth today? And we have this hindsight game we play with ourselves. And it simply is this. If you think you're a great investor because now you've read some articles that give you hindsight, and you think it's now easy to pick the next winner like that, if it were simply that easy and you did it without a lot of diversification, you'd be hard-pressed to learn, it'd be easy to learn actually, that most mutual fund managers in those categories have a hard time picking several companies that would outperform the way these companies have. That is the tricky part. If we knew what was going on, if we could predict the future, we would be very, very easy. It's just very tough to predict the future. And I wonder if we had the numbers, if it's even here. What if you did it 10 years ago, 5 years ago, where would you be today? And we don't have those numbers. We said 20 years ago. And I think there's a lot of single stocks we could put in this category. But again, my philosophy is this. Core wealth should be diversified based on your goals and objectives, and you could take maybe 10%, maybe slightly more, and buy single stock securities if that's something you're interested in and you're going to put the time in to learn and research. All right, this is Financial Coaching Radio. Make sure you stick around right here on WGNS. I'll be back right after this.
How much are your investments costing you each year? Most people don't have a clue. Why is this extremely important? Because overpaying by just 1% a year in fees and expenses can reduce your account balance at retirement by 28%. You heard me right. 28% less at retirement. I'm commission-free, certified financial planner, Jason Qualls. I don't sell financial products. I don't accept commissions or kickbacks from investment companies. Give me a call today for a free unbiased investment review at 878-2134 or visit my website, jasonquallscfp.com. Buying a house is stressful, and so is shopping for a mortgage. Take my advice and get a second opinion on the mortgage for your new home or your refinance. Not all banks and mortgage companies are created equal. Trust me on this. Call my friend Marshall Spartman with Franklin Synergy Bank at 615-439-0885. Great team, great process, and the best rates. Marshall Spartman with Franklin Synergy Bank at 615-439-0885. Monday through Friday, 4 o'clock right here on WGNS. Again, WGNS, financialcoachingradio.com is the place to listen to the show anytime, anywhere. All you got to do is click on the archives, most recent shows. You'll get a list of all the shows. You can go back several years, I believe, on the website. Some are titled by the date. Some are titled by what we're discussing. And we try to pick topics on this show that they're not just this basic, you know, get a budget, live on less than you make, stay out of debt, because look, some of that stuff, not that we don't need to hear it, we certainly need to hear it more often when we're younger, but once we've learned that lesson, the real world of financial planning, tax planning, estate planning all changes. And that's what we're catering to here, is that you've kind of learned those life lessons, staying out of consumer debt, living on a budget, live within your means. Not to mean we don't make financial mistakes, because I don't care who you are, everyone we'll make financial mistakes from time to time, and that is just inevitable. But we want to make sure we prevent as many of those mistakes as possible. And you can do that for yourself, or you can actually have an expert on your team, and that would be an independent, commission-free, certified financial planner and advisor who only works for you, paid by you, and has the top credential of CFP, Certified Financial Planner. All right, I'm out of here for today. I appreciate you listening every time you tune in. Keep it locked in right here on WGNS. This is your place for local talk.